This is In Conversation from Apple News. I'm Shumita Basu. Today, how the U.S. government separated migrant families and how it could happen again. In mid-2017, the Trump administration began quietly separating children from their parents at the U.S.-Mexico border. It would be a full year before administration officials formally acknowledged the practice as part of their zero-tolerance policy, with many calling it a deterrent against illegal immigration. It became one of the most controversial policies in modern American history.
New images released by Customs and Border Protection show the living conditions for people being held at a Border Patrol facility in South Texas. Children can be seen in steel cages,
sleeping on mattresses on the floor,
with foil sheets as blankets.
It is images like these that have now become a flashpoint in the Trump administration's zero tolerance policy.
Thousands of migrant children being separated from their parents.
She was breastfeeding when the government took her daughter from her.
And now, in a recording first obtained by ProPublica, you can hear the desperate sobbing of children.
You can hear 6-year-old Allison Jimena Valencia Madrid from El Salvador begging to talk to her aunt.
Backlash is growing across the country.
Many religious leaders around the world are also condemning the policy.
Criticism from all former first ladies, including Laura Bush, calling the policy cruel and immoral.
67% of Americans believe separating children from parents on the southern border is unacceptable.
I mean, this is government-sanctioned child abuse.
More than 5,000 children were ultimately separated from their families. In June of 2018, Trump signed an executive order ending the policy. To date, more than 1,300 children still have not been reunited with their parents. As Trump prepares for his second term, he's vowed to deport massive numbers of migrants, which experts say could separate families again. A new documentary called Separated tells the story of the family separation policy through sit-downs with government officials and staffers who were tasked with implementing it. The film is directed by Academy Award-winning documentarian Errol Morris, and it's based on reporting done by NBC correspondent Jacob Soboroff, one of the first journalists invited by the Trump administration to see the facilities where children were being held. I started my conversation by asking Jacob to bring us back to the origin story of this policy.
In early 2016, during the Colorado caucus, there was a young man up at the podium really screaming. And when I say screaming, I mean yelling about undocumented immigrants in a way that I really wasn't familiar with. It seemed so abrasive and so angry. And turned out it was Stephen Miller. I didn't realize it then, but what it turns out Stephen Miller was screaming about in that Colorado ballroom in early 2016 was what became the family separation policy, a policy that had been considered under the Obama administration by some of the same officials like Tom Homan, who are going to return to government today, but dismissed by the leadership at the time as too cruel, too inhumane. And so when Donald Trump did win the presidency in 2016, there was a meeting at the Ronald Reagan Building in Washington, D.C. with some of the same cast of characters, and the push for family separation began almost right away. And so this was a policy that was developed and implemented in the earliest days of the Trump administration before anyone had any idea it was actually going on.
And one of the agencies that we come to learn a lot about through the film is the Office of Refugee Resettlement, ORR. Can you explain a little bit about what the office does, what it's in charge of? What was it doing before family separations took place and what it was doing after?
The Office of Refugee Resettlement is designed to have care and custody of unaccompanied migrant children, amongst other responsibilities, who come into the United States. And when I say unaccompanied, I mean they come here by themselves. During the Obama administration, there was a large number of unaccompanied migrant children. And it is correct when you hear that the cages that Trump put the separated children in were built during the Obama administration as they expanded facilities because of an increase in unaccompanied migrant children who came to the United States. But unaccompanied is the key word here. Under the Trump administration, the agency was used to not only deal with unaccompanied migrant children who made the journey here by themselves from desperate situations, mostly from Central America, but for children who were rendered unaccompanied, literally taken away from their parents at the Southwest border as a part of what became to be known as the zero tolerance policy. It was hijacked, in the words of Jonathan White, who was a career official that you'll come to meet in the film, really a hero, like so many others within the agency.
Yeah, he was the serving deputy director at the ORR, right?
That's exactly right. He tried to stand up and resist this family separation policy with so many others and was unable to. I mean, they stopped it to a certain degree, ultimately. What Stephen Miller wanted to do, which was separate 20 or 30,000 children, was stopped at the number 5,500. That's 5,500 too many. But this agency used to take care of children was essentially used to traumatize them.
And it sounds like the folks there are saying that they at some point realized that family separations were happening before it was formally announced as a policy. How did they come to that realization?
Reports from people in the field, they're called federal field specialists, and they are quite literally sprinkled all throughout the country at all of these different facilities run by the Office of Refugee Resettlement. And they were starting to see babies, toddlers, infants, I don't know any other way to describe it, come into these facilities, which was very unusual at the time. You don't get babies and toddlers and infants walking across the Southwest border by themselves and into the care and custody of career social workers unless they're taken away from their mothers and fathers once they get here. Mm. And so there was this feeling of what's going on? You know, what are we seeing? And they started to keep an informal spreadsheet. A guy by the name of Jim De La Cruz kept the spreadsheet literally tracking these separations. And when officials from the Office of Refugee Resettlement would go to their counterparts in the Department of Homeland Security, who are the ones carrying out the separations through the Border Patrol, and ask them what's going on, basically the answer they got back was, no, that's not happening. But it was happening, and they could see it not only in the numbers on the spreadsheet, but the children within their facilities.
Jacob, I understand that you were among the few journalists who were invited to see the facilities that were holding children and infants who'd been separated from their parents. Can you describe that day, what you saw?
Yeah, I'll never forget it. It was 2 days, actually, June 13th, 2018, and then Father's Day 2018, a couple of days later. Sounds strange to say I was invited, but that's exactly what happened. Katie Waldman, who was the junior most press deputy for Kirstjen Nielsen, she invited me into these facilities. Katie Waldman later ended up marrying Stephen Miller, as today Katie Miller. And so she put me, basically, and nine other journalists inside a 250,000-square-foot former Walmart without cameras, with only paper and pen, to see over 1,000 young boys on that day on June 13th, most of them who had been there only because they were taken away from their moms and dads, living inside this facility. And that was, you know, ostensibly a shelter. But all I could think about was these kids are incarcerated. And then a couple of days later, I went back to South Texas, to McAllen, Texas, to the Ursula Central Processing Station. And that's the day that I saw the kids locked up in those cages on the concrete floors with the Mylar blankets. The images, essentially the propaganda images the government handed out to the public. And, you know, the reason I think today, in retrospect, when I look back, why I was invited there was to broadcast the idea that the U.S. government was doing something so deliberately cruel to these children to scare away other people from coming to the country and to scare Congress into enacting more restrictive immigration laws. But what I can say, you know, in hindsight is that it didn't work. Deterrence never works. Deterrence has been the immigration policy of the U.S. government, at least since Bill Clinton. They literally had a policy called prevention through deterrence. And deterrence is a euphemism. Deterrence is a euphemism for harm, for hurting people. That document, Prevention Through Deterrence, in the 90s from Bill Clinton, said that they knew that migrants would go to more dangerous and deadly places, likely die crossing the U.S. border once they started building the first wave of border walls. And it continued with Bush as they created DHS in the wake of 9/11 and exponentially increased the size of the Border Patrol. Barack Obama deported more people than any president in the history of the United States of America. And then, with the snap of a finger, Donald Trump was able to separate thousands of children from their parents because the system was set up in that way. And what I saw in those facilities on that day was sort of the most extreme extension of that philosophy. It's one that hasn't happened, didn't happen before, and it hasn't happened since, but we could be on the verge of returning to in the course of the next couple months.
I know that you have spoken with family members who were separated under this policy. Can you tell us about some of those stories that stand out to you?
Sure. You know, in the book, I write about a father and son from Petén, Guatemala, who ultimately were separated for many, many months when they arrived here at the border. And, you know, the thing that sticks out to me about them, and, you know, I'll never forget the time that I spent together with them, including in ICE detention with the father. And Errol so brilliantly captures this in the film. There's a anger and a resentment that develops, a sorrow on behalf of the parent and a confusion on behalf of the child about how could this happen? How could you let this happen?
Mm, the child feeling that way.
That's right.
The parent,
you know? That's right. And that's one story. They're back together today to live in Washington, D.C., and they've been reunited with the rest of their family by the Biden administration's task force that was created to bring family members back together who had been separated by this policy. But Errol has done something in this film that I think really is remarkable, which is there is no footage of any of these separations happening to these parents and children. There is no footage of the journeys that they took. There was no documentary crew following along with them.
Yeah, you're saying it doesn't exist.
It does not exist.
Yeah.
And so in the way that only Errol Morris can, and the way that Errol Morris has historically over all of his films, or many of his films, he has created a narrative here, a fictionalized portrait of a mother and son brought to life by Gabriela Cartol, the extraordinary Mexican actress, with the production design of Eugenio Caballero, who did Pan's Labyrinth and Roma, won an Oscar, and a whole team to get to really what you asked me about, which is an emotional truth that really belongs to the families, but that was never documented because the U.S. government didn't allow it to be. Mm-hmm. And so when you see the film, it's both a series of interviews, it's a series of emails and other forms of media that you see on the screen, but it's this journey of a mother and son that when I saw the film for the first time, it was something that I never could have created or imagined when reporting on this or writing the book. But to see it on the big screen as a film, I think it's the most important part of the story.
As Jacob mentioned, Errol Morris is known for his distinctive visual style and recreating events never caught on camera. His 1988 film, The Thin Blue Line, which helped free a man who was wrongfully convicted of murdering a Texas police officer, included reenactments that, at the time, were seen as both extremely innovative and controversial. The film now ranks among the most critically acclaimed documentaries ever made, and Errol is widely credited with legitimizing the use of reenactments in documentary filmmaking. In the film Separated, with the fictionalized portrayal of a mother and son, Errol said that he wanted to center the human side of this story, something that's often left out of conversations about immigration.
If you listen to Trump, every single person crossing the border is a rapist, a drug dealer, a child molester, at best a criminal of some sort. Never mentioned is that it's people desperate for a better life, people desperate to leave a situation where their lives are at risk.
And to be clear, Errol sees both parties as having big failures here.
Did Biden, Harris in the election run-up, did they ever try to address immigration? The best that they could come up with was Trump's efforts to destroy a bill that would impose new draconian measures on crossing the border. No one could even speak to it.
Errol is also known for a very particular way of interviewing his subjects. He actually invented a device called the Interitron. It's basically a system of mirrors that allows the interviewee to stare directly into the camera while also looking at the interviewer. It's become so common in documentary filmmaking, but it was Errol Morris who cracked the code on how to create this very intimate, very up-close style. In Separated, we see Errol using this technique as he talks to people who were working in the federal government when family separations were being carried out. Some of the most fascinating to watch exchanges are with Scott Lloyd, who was the director of the Office of Refugee Resettlement. Emails appear on the screen showing Lloyd in direct communication with White House senior advisor Stephen Miller. And you hear Errol press Lloyd, who is staring right into the camera, on where he was getting his directives from.
Presumably in conversations with Miller, he must have said reasons why they were doing this.
I really don't know why. Well, why him as opposed to anybody else?
Why him? Because he's well known as having extremely draconian immigration policies. That's why him.
Okay. Well,
and I knew that you were talking to him. That's why.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to overcharacterize the extent to which I was in contact with White House personnel.
Errol told me he was deeply unsatisfied with Lloyd's responses.
He hardly ever is able to answer a question. He seems to be, for the most part, chewing on his gums. To call it equivocation, I think, is just too kind. It's mumbling, attempts at lying, which I would say are deeply and obviously ineffective.
Errol and his team reached out to Stephen Miller, Jeff Sessions, and the Biden administration, but none of them responded to requests for comment. He came closer to getting interviews with a few other officials, like former Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen and former ICE official Tom Homan, who Trump has now tapped to act as border czar in the next administration.
I talked to Kirstjen Nielsen on the phone many times, but it never resulted in an interview. And in the case of Tom Homan, he agreed to an interview, actually showed up, waited to be interviewed, sat in the green room, and in the end declined to appear. He got cold feet for whatever reason.
Jacob says one of the most meaningful parts of this whole experience, besides working with such a legendary filmmaker, has been taking the documentary around the country and seeing some of the young people who were separated from their parents at the screenings.
Eric in Philadelphia, Kelly in Chicago, Brian, who was the first young man to be reunited with his parents under the Biden administration task force, came to the Los Angeles screening because all of them have the same message. They do not want this to happen to anyone ever again after going through it themselves.
Wow. Wow. That's so interesting to hear that they were at the screenings. What was their impression of the film?
For some of them, it was too hard to watch. But for Brian, he sat through the entire film and went right up into our Q&A on the panel afterwards. I invited him up to the stage knowing that he was there and wanted to talk about how he wanted everybody possible to see it because, as I said earlier, there's something about the sort of emotional truth that, you know, can't be described. But when you see it up on the screen, I think you're able to internalize what, in part, you know, and none of us will ever truly be able to understand it, what these families went through at the hands of the U.S. government. And instead of waiting 150 years like we waited for, you know, the Biden administration to apologize for Native American boarding schools or, you know, a generation for Japanese American internment camps to go on the National Register of Historic Places or, you know, an apology for the turning around of the St. Louis, you know, back to the Holocaust, that list goes on and on and on. We're trying to deal with the reality of this right now. In real time.
I was hoping that we could talk about what happened in 2018, in June of 2018, when Trump signed an executive order ending his own policy of family separations formally. A week later, a federal judge ordered that children under the age of 5 have to be reunited with their parents within 2 weeks. All other children must be reunited within 30 days. That, of course, sets into motion a tremendous amount of effort and action by the Office of Refugee Resettlement. Jonathan White talks about this in the film. I mean, how do the people who were working on that process describe what those days were like?
Unbelievably chaotic. But I think it's really important to underscore what you're describing here, which was a retreat by Donald Trump, perhaps the only, certainly the most significant, but maybe the only major policy retreat of Donald Trump's first term in office, a notoriously hard-headed, stubborn person when it comes to politics, who never turns his back on policies that he puts into place. It's the part of the film that makes me realize this is not just the film about as a Republican-appointed judge who ordered the reunifications of those children, as you mentioned, called it one of the most shameful chapters in the history of our country. But it's also, to me, an extraordinarily inspiring story, and actually a hopeful one, that because of people inside the government and because of people around the world, I can remember, you know, the hundreds of thousands of people, not just in the United States, but globally, the Pope spoke out against this policy, who ended this and forced Donald Trump to say what he said in the Oval Office that day. Is Kirstjen Nielsen, the woman who signed the policy into place, stood over his shoulder as he signed the executive order. He said, "I didn't like the sight and the feeling
of families being separated."
And when this was forced into the public, when it became so clearly morally unacceptable to people all around the world of all political parties, persuasions, you name it. He backed down, and it prevented a much worse outcome of a policy that they wanted to essentially supersize from the version that they were able to implement. And now we're back at the same place. Mass deportation, the reason I say it's family separation by another name, is that there are literally millions of people in this country who live in mixed status households, who live with an undocumented immigrant in their house. And while family separation at the border was ripping children away from parents, mass deportation in the interior is family separation because it will rip parents away from children in their homes or at their workplaces or outside of their schools. And so we're on the verge of this happening again. And the film is a reminder, that point in 2018 is a reminder that you asked about, that the American people have a stake in this, and that the general public is the reason the civil servants, the immigration attorneys, who are as important as any first responder on any front line, literally saving lives, they're the ones responsible for ending this policy. Mm-hmm. And in the face of something like it again, they can do it again.
Yeah. Can we talk a bit more about the accountability piece in all of this? I mean, we've just named a number of people who were known to be connected to the creation of this policy. Where does the accountability stand here?
I think that that's exactly the right question. Where is the accountability here? And the answer is nowhere, unfortunately. And President Biden famously said in the final presidential debate of 2020 to my colleague Kristen Welker, the moderator of Meet the Press, that he believed that the family separation policy was criminal. And Merrick Garland, during his confirmation hearings to become the attorney general, said he couldn't imagine anything worse than ripping parents apart from their children. And yet not a single member of the Trump administration responsible for the policy, which Physicians for Human Rights said met the UN definition of torture, nor any of the career officials from any of the agencies that were involved in this policy, the Department of Justice, the Department of Homeland Security, nor political appointees like Scott Lloyd have ever, I mean, there has been no criminal investigation, as far as we know, opened from within the Justice Department into the family separation policy, despite everything that we know about it. The Biden administration today, as I sit here talking to you two, is fighting in court families over financial restitution that at one point they had been offered or proposed as a global settlement agreement to financially compensate every one of the families that went through this policy. The Biden administration, in the face of a question from a Fox News reporter at a presidential press conference, backed down from that settlement agreement. And so while there is an effort to bring the families back together, what does making them whole look like? I can tell you that it's not what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm. But what would it, I mean, theoretically, what could it look like?
As I mentioned, there was on the table a global settlement agreement that would financially have compensated every one of the families for what they went through. These families do not have permanent status in the United States of America. And so many of the families that went through the policy could end up being kicked out of the country under a new Trump administration.
Yeah. You know, Jonathan White in the film, I remember, seems to be placing a lot of blame on Congress for not passing laws to prevent something like family separations ever happening again. I mean, where do you see Congress in all of this?
Well, family separation has not been banned by Congress, period, full stop, end of the conversation. They can, with one piece of legislation, bar the immigration enforcement apparatus from using family separation as a tool of immigration enforcement, and they haven't done that. It was proposed, most notably by Julian Castro, but the bill went nowhere. And the law that stopped the policy was the U.S. Constitution and the Due Process Clause of the U.S. Constitution. Congress can go a step further and make it a statute.
You know, I appreciated the way that you pointed this out earlier, that when Trump ended his own family separation policy in 2018, that that was not only a rare reversal, but something that seemed to have resulted from public pressure. And I wonder what you think, in an incoming Trump administration, where is public perception right now? Do you think there is enough public willpower to feel outrage over family separations and mass deportations if they were to happen in some form again?
Without a doubt. And I think that the issue is that people have to stop wanting to know less. People have to go back to wanting to know more about what's happening to other people in this country. And so I don't think it's a matter of people not caring, I think people have put blinders up. And it's part of the reason that I am so incredibly honored to have had the privilege to make this film with Errol Morris. When Errol Morris does something, people pay attention. And I hope that this will remind people of how we all felt at that time and the power that we all have to make a difference on behalf of fellow human beings.
According to the latest report from the Department of Homeland Security, more than 1,300 children have still not been reunited with their families. Some of those separations have lasted as long as 6 years at this point. What do we know about these children today, these families, where they are, how they are?
Most of the parents have been deported without their children and are likely living in Central America. And, you know, whether or not the Biden administration would tell you this, they're scared to respond to the outreach of people in civil society literally going door to door because they're part of a task force set up by the same U.S. government that ripped apart those families themselves. And so while this effort is ongoing to find and track down many of the parents who were deported without their children, who are likely living in the United States with other family members or relatives, we don't know how many of them will ultimately accept the offer. I talked to someone this morning who's engaged in that effort and said that there are hundreds of them who are in the process of still being reunited today. But let's say that number was 300. There'd still be 1,000 parents and children without confirmed reunifications if they were able to accomplish that goal. And it's a matter of trust. It's a matter of a willingness of these families to accept that the U.S. government that ripped them apart from one another is now saying, we're going to put you back together. And that trust may have been, you know, frayed forever.
Separated is a documentary by Errol Morris based on Jacob Soboroff's book, Separated: Inside an American Tragedy. We'll include a link to the trailer on our show notes page.